Welcome to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca. Astoria's Columbia Riverfront is welcoming, walkable, and safe. But as little as 30 years ago, it was a rougher place. As director of the Chamber from 1994 through 2004, I had a front row seat to the riverfront's change and the people behind it. The driver behind that transformation was Paul Benoit, then the community development director for the city. Paul is a friend, and I sat down with him to reminisce about his arrival in Astoria and the years-long work of giving all of us access to our beautiful waterfront.
My wife and I, Connie, and I were living in the North American Islands on the island of Saipan. Mm-hmm. My background was kind of in environmental planning, marine biology, and that's what I was doing in Saipan. Our first son was born. We wanted to get back to the U.S. where there was healthcare because it was just a tiny little island. Mm-hmm. Looking for jobs, I had a friend who worked for the Columbia River Estuary Study Task Force.
Right, correct.
CREST.
Yeah.
He sent me a flyer, you know, no email back then. It sent me a notice that CREST was in the process of recruiting a new executive director. So I applied. Long story, I got the job. Kind of looked at a globe and said, oh, that looks like a cool place, mm-hmm. Astoria. And with my marine background, being on a coast and on a river was important. So we came to Astoria. We're both from Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. The thought was that we would make our way back to New England, probably Rhode Island. But then another son was born. And then I liked my job. One thing happens and one thing after another. And probably about 1985, 1986, Jim Flint was the city manager. He came after Dale Curry. Dale Curry was a city manager for like 20-some years. So, and Jim at the point was sort of a young, but kind of a new, new blood mm-hmm. in the city as city manager. And Gene Hallow was the planning director, and he was retiring. I had done a lot of working for CREST. I did a lot of work for all the cities on the mm-hmm. Lower Columbia on both sides of the river.
Right.
And so I used to go to city council meetings and present, and they knew me. And so Jim Flint, the city manager, when Gene Hallow was retiring, he asked me if I would apply. I had to compete for it, but he asked me to apply. I got the job. That was 1986. And my background, you know, my master's degree was in coastal zone management, mm-hmm. and that was like in the late 70s. And at that time, like, Oregon was a beacon in the country for public access to waterfronts, like the Beach Bill, right. Tom McCall. And so in grad school, we'd have seminars talking about access to waterfronts and the Beach Bill. And I was in Seattle. I was going to the University of Washington. It was just kind of imprinted on my mind. You know, access to waterfronts, that's a really important thing. And I grew up on the coast in Rhode Island, and access to beaches, it was tough. There was a lot of privately owned property you couldn't get to the water, right. except through a state beach. That was kind of just in my mindset. I come to Astoria, I'm the new community development director. And at the time, the city was, I'd say, kind of on its heels. You know, the fishing, logging, the mill, everything was kind of teetering a bit.
The 80s were a rough time.
It was tough.
There. Yeah.
It was tough. And downtown was tough. As you know, you remember even to the 90s,
yep.
you know, it wasn't so much empty storefronts, but some of the things that were occupying the storefronts were tough.
Right, exactly.
And so, you know, for families, it wasn't a place you'd stroll in the evening. But on the riverfront, like where the Wet Dog is now, Astoria Brewing, and kind of between 6th Street and 14th Street, mm-hmm. that area of the downtown waterfront, I remember City Transfer, the moving and storage company, they parked all of their 18-wheelers on the riverfront behind those buildings. And it was just potholes. I loved it. You know, if you're 28, 29, 30, you know, you're young and you can just go and explore back there. But
yeah.
if you were a young woman alone or an older person because footing was unstable, you know, with the potholes and the railroad tracks. So it was being used for industrial purposes and basically neglected. The Burlington Northern owned the right-of-way. Back then, maybe a train every couple of weeks would show up, and it would usually just go as far as a plywood mill and load up with plywood and go, wouldn't come all the way downtown. But regardless, the Burlington Northern controlled the Astoria's riverfront because the tracks run along the riverfront.
Right.
And they have 25 feet either side of the center line. And I remember, you know, just having this idea of public access, and I liked walking the riverfront, but it was a random few people back there.
Yeah, as you say, at that point, people were uneasy going downtown at night.
Right.
And uneasy walking on the riverfront because it at least felt dangerous.
Well, and it kind of was. I mean, it was the backside of the buildings. That those buildings, you know, now, you know, there are restaurants and activities that face the railroad tracks. Back then, you know, it was just like parking and rutted, and it wasn't that safe. In the broad daylight, sure, but not in the evening. It was walking in the backside of buildings. It was a rough place. I was kind of pursuing this public access idea, and it was great with the city council. You know, Edith Henningsgar was the mayor at the time, but then later Willis was on the council, but Willis was mayor for 27 years. And all the city managers I worked for when I was community development director and the council were completely supportive of these ideas that I was throwing out, like the Riverwalk and public access. And they just kind of just gave me free rein to just pursue. Again, at that point, it was ideas. I didn't need any money but in the budget because I was just running with ideas. You know, one thing led to another. I remember talking to the Burlington Northern, which, how do you talk to the Burlington Northern? But there was somebody in Seattle who was in charge of real estate, and I called him on the phone and talked about wanting to develop kind of a pathway along the railroad tracks. And he said, like, first, like, no way. But then he kind of eased up and said, well, if the city put a fence, and it had to be like 8 feet high, chain link, so that you couldn't get through it, on either side of the, like 7 feet either side of the metal rails for the entire length, then we could, now granted, there were no trains coming through there.
Right. At that point, it was.
Yeah. And they weren't maintaining it. They weren't doing anything. But still, like, really, you want us to put a fence to protect from what? But that was what they required. And that was not going to happen. I mean, it would be ridiculously expensive, but also defeat the purpose of, right. I mean, how do you get from the riverfront to the buildings? You know, I mean, there's a continuous chain link fence running there. So it was kind of silly. So kind of parked that idea and instead had the idea of street end river parks. So we started at 6th Street. Doug Thompson was on the city council at the time, and he owned the building. He and some partners owned the building where the old Bumblebee headquarters were, where the Cannery Cafe used to be. And then there was a two-story building on the east side of 6th Street that had offices and little restaurants.
Right. I think a lot of people probably don't remember that there was a big building there, number 10 6th Street it became, which was kind of a multi-use building for offices. And the Cannery Cafe, which was a very nice restaurant. And they're gone when that burned down.
Yeah. I mean, it was a beautiful building, and it was the headquarters of Bumblebee Seafoods, and it dated back to the late 1800s. So it was a cool historic building. And like we still have in town, the 6th Street extended out between the buildings. It was a dock that went out and just dead end because when it was Bumblebee Seafoods, they had trucks and deliveries and stuff, so they had the dock between it. Doug Thompson and his partners were, you know, they had the restaurant and developing offices and trying to get some energy in that building. And so I approached him. I mean, again, I was working this already with the idea with the city council. I wasn't just freelancing, at least not totally. But I talked to Doug and others. I said, well, what if we partner? Like the city, like this is really going to benefit your building and your bottom line. And they agreed and they went 50-50. And that's how the 6th Street River Park. Now, the only remnant of it is that tower, you know, the viewing tower. And we hired an architect to help us kind of design. There's that, you know, 2 or 3 tiered deck. You know, you go out to the dock, and then there's an area where people fish and stuff. But the building's burned down. But nonetheless, it was our first, the city's first attempt at public access, you know, and it was, you know, the 6th Street River Park. Then we did the 14th Street River Park, and that's the pier where the old ferry landing was. So we did that because we couldn't do along the, we couldn't do a walk. We could only do where the city control, which was our street ends.
Just trying to remember what things were like, sort of west of the Maritime Museum. There was some pavement and so on because there were a lot of businesses there. There were seafood processing facilities there and so on. But as you got east of the Maritime Museum, I don't remember exactly how far, but it was basically railroad tracks and weeds.
It was no man's land. You had the plywood mill, which was still operating. But yeah, there was nothing out there. There's no housing. You know, now there's a lot of housing, not just the plywood mill, but you know, by the police station, there's all this development that happened. Back then, no, it was just, Astoria's waterfront was industrial, and I'll point to the remnant of the public works yard.
Right.
Who would put a public works, you know, two city blocks dedicated to storing pipes and fire hydrants and trucks?
On the riverfront.
On the riverfront. But back then, that's how the riverfront was used.
Sure.
You know, that would, no one, you know, and, you know, again, if I was still involved with the city, I'd really want to see, you know, develop plans with the community for what could that site be, and then you could relocate the public works yard. And we actually reserved space for that to happen over by the transfer station where the football field is. So there is space to move it, but it's a lot of energy, a lot of focus, a lot of money, a lot of time. But someday, but I only make that point because the Astoria Riverfront, that's how it was used. It was an industrial riverfront. The seafood processing plants were kind of cool. I mean, you had Bornstein's and Ocean Beauty and then piling remnants of a bygone era.
Right.
But there was active seafood processing. But Carmichael Oil, where the Chevron station is, just west of 6th Street, you know, so there's still the Chevron station, but there used to be a tank farm there. But like where the new state office building is, well, the old state office building, the building that's now abandoned, it's a new building that's abandoned, but that was all tank farm. But from east to west, that's how it was. They really, you know, at the street ends, you had like England Marine Supply was...
Where Moe's Seafood is now. That was England Marine.
That was England Marine.
Yeah.
That was England Marine. But yeah, the riverfront was just a tough place. The Burlington Northern was uncooperative.
I'm glad you gave this description because I think a lot of people who live here now, it's as if the Riverwalk has always been there. And for some people, it's like the Mill Pond development has always been there. And it hasn't. I mean, this is fairly recent stuff. And in all truth, I mean, your name isn't on it, but your name should be on it in the sense that you were the driving force behind that. And I know you didn't do it yourself and that the council was cooperative and so on. And you had the Morosi plan that we're going to talk about to help shape the ideas. Right. But it needed somebody who was extremely persistent at pushing this idea forward. And you were that guy.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned persistence because that's, I mean, I look back and I know that is true. And and I, you know, I ended up, you know, like I said, we came to Astoria with the idea that we'd eventually make our way back east, but it kind of fell in love with the town. And we lived down in Alderbrook on the riverfront. And, you know, Astoria is a place that you look out at that river every day, you see those ships go by, and it just makes you glad to be alive.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just it's a beautiful spot. And that just kind of deeply resonated with me, as it probably does for most sort of Astorians. But I fell in love with the place and stuck with it. You couldn't have done that if I moved on in 5 years or if the councils kept changing. You know, Willis was mayor for like 27 years.
Yeah.
There was a consistency there where people, you know, we didn't change every 5 years with a new directive. And so it just, it was a cool time in Astoria. It still is, but Astoria then was, it was kind of fun. It was challenging. And I had the ability, the freedom to pursue projects that really needed to be pursued. But yeah, it was, I just enjoyed every, almost every minute of those 27 years. 17 years as community developer, 10 years as city manager. So that's why I say 27.
when my wife and guy and I got here in 1994, we still were pretty much there with those two things that had been developed, the Sixth Street viewing platform, which really was quite lovely. I mean, you wouldn't, it's not as attractive now because of the fire
right.
that took out the things next to it and so on, but it was like a really refreshing spot on the river. And the 14th Street access. And you mentioned the ferry landing, and that was, just for clarity, that was the ferry that used to take people across to the peninsula
right.
before the bridge.
Before the bridge.
And it was regular ferry service there.
And that's why the Astor Hotel is here. You know, the six-story, you know, now it's housing with shops down below, but that was the place, you know. So all the, you know, tourists and people who are coming to Astoria heading to Washington, the hotel was kind of a humming, happening place. Mm-hmm. If you look back at the old newspapers and see pictures of what went on there, it was really something. And you wouldn't, people look at that giant building now and say, God, why is that in Astoria?
I think we've had periods like that in Astoria, and this period that we're talking about now was certainly one of them. But we have sort of remarkable things here, that there had to be a period of real creativity before. Why do we have Shively Park?
Why do you have the Astoria Column?
Why do we have the Astoria Column right. on the top of this hill, where in most cities that would be some rich person who bought that and that was their development or
right.
whatever? Why do we have our own watershed? I mean, all of these things took some vision and work and so on by people in the past. And I think this thing that we're talking about now was the thing that I think you largely pushed through with your persistence, is I think our most recent example of that. So when we got here in 94, you were talking then about the Morassi plan. What was the Morassi plan, and who was Morassi?
Bob Morassi, who passed away maybe 10 years ago, Japanese-American landscape architect, mm-hmm. had a firm in Portland and did work all over the world, but kind of with that Japanese aesthetic, subtle, mm-hmm. beautiful, but in again, subtle ways. It's kind of who he was and what he did. At the time, the city, what I wanted to back up and say, because the Morassi plan looked at how should we go about developing the Riverwalk,
mm-hmm.
the riverfront, the parks and the Riverwalk. And there was no sense making that investment to hire a landscape architect to work with us to do that unless the Burlington Northern was going to let us do it. And at that point, they weren't letting us do it. And I remember talking with Bud Forrester. Bud Forrester is Steve Forrester's dad.
Mm-hmm.
And Forrester family owned, you know, the Daily Historian, at the time, the Daily newspaper. And Bud was a publisher editor. And I remember meeting with him in his office where the Daily Historian building is, and just lamenting to him just my frustration with the railroad. Like, as long as they're just a bottleneck, and we have this concept and we just can't go anywhere with it. Bud says, and I'm probably, this is a long time ago and my memory's not solid, but the sketch of this is correct. Bud said, well, I go salmon fishing with the president of the Burlington Northern Railroad almost every year. He loves salmon fishing. He comes out to Astoria and they charter a boat and they go out salmon fishing. The president of the Burlington Northern, I mean, that's a national firm. And Bud says, I'll talk to him. I'm thinking, like, I was just there to like moan and groan.
Yeah.
And I didn't think he was going to do anything for me, and let alone he fishes with the guy. Sure enough, he talked to him like he said he would when he came out fishing. And I'm oversimplifying it, but I think this is the gist of it. The Burlington Northern only sent a train down here, you know, at that point it wasn't once every 2 weeks. They didn't at all. But
there was no flour mill anymore. There was no, the industrial stuff that made the train make sense
right.
wasn't there anymore.
So at that time, Mark Hatfield was one of the Oregon senators, and he was a very powerful senator. He visited Astoria quite often. He was just a great guy. Bud Forrester, being publisher editor of a regional newspaper, knew Mark Hatfield,
mm-hmm.
and talked to him about this also because the Burlington Northern Railroad did not want to upset Mark Hatfield by abandoning rail lines in Oregon.
Hmm.
So the rail lines, they would like, they didn't, it was just like a monkey on their back. But
oh, really? Okay. I thought they wanted to keep it just in case something opened up.
No, it's just the liability. It's expensive. They wanted to, from a national perspective, they didn't need to upset a powerful U.S. senator who could make things difficult for them in other venues across the country. Mm-hmm. So they weren't touching anything in Oregon or Astoria, let alone Astoria. So when it got communicated through Bud Forrester and, you know, Mark Hatfield to the Burlington Northern that Astoria would actually like you to abandon the line, that just opened it up. But a key here is that when a railroad abandons a line, just like when a street vacates a right-of-way, when a city vacates a right-of-way, you know, a city street, the property reverts to all the adjacent property owners.
Right.
So if the Burlington Northern abandoned the railroad line, you know, at least the five miles from Tongue Point to Smith Point, it would revert to all of the adjacent property owners on either side of the tracks, which would be horrible.
Well, this as an example of that, the city is dealing with that very problem regarding development out east where the Navy used to be at Blue Ridge.
Yeah.
Because they've abandoned it, and now it's just this mishmash of who owns the property where the roads are.
Yeah, and trying to go back in time and figure that out. But going back to my graduate school days, public access to waterfronts, one of the things we studied in grad school was the National Trails Act.
Mm-hmm.
And people talk about rails to trails.
Yeah.
So it's the National Trails Act. But there was federal legislation called, I think, the National Trails Act, but it popularly known as Rails to Trails. And what it is in lieu of abandonment, the railroad can transfer, either by sale or just transfer, the right-of-way to a public entity or a not-for-profit to manage for trail purposes. And the idea is that you're preserving the corridor. So mm-hmm. that 50-foot corridor, 25 feet either side of that center line is still open space. Like, that's why we can walk for 5 miles
right.
on the trail. But the concept is you have rails to trails. You can also have trails back to rails.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is they call it rail banking mm-hmm. because you're putting the corridor, quote, in the bank. So you're saving this corridor as opposed to it breaking up into 500 different little parcels that you'll never get back again. So the city rail bank, the Burlington Northern gave us that line for $50, rail banked.
Wow.
And our contract would allow it to revert back for rail use. Now, that's probably not going to happen given the condition of the rail from here to Portland.
Oh, absolutely.
And also with the river, it's a lot cheaper to keep things on a barge or a ship than it is to put on rail. And there's no highways here like there is in Portland. So probably it's not going to happen. But the corridor is preserved, and the city is the caretaker of that corridor. Interestingly, usually when this happens, the railroad removes all their infrastructure. So all the metal rails,
right.
all the ties, all of that goes. Because it used to be that when I came to Astoria in the 80s, the trestle, when you get to Smith Point where the port is, it continued across Young's
right.
Bay
right.
to the Warrington side. In the eight, before I got on the scene, that was abandoned. The line from Smith Point, kind of that westerly end of Astoria to Warrington was abandoned. And that's why you don't see that trestle anymore. It's all, and if you go to the Dyke Trail in Warrington, mm-hmm. that used to be railroad.
Railroad, yeah.
But there's no ties, there's no rails, it's all gone. Mm-hmm. That would have happened in Astoria. And I'll say, you know, when we were advancing this concept of rail banking, rails to trails, a riverwalk, it was not received well by the riverfront property owners. As you can, for a lot of reasons. Like for the sewer processing plants, they envisioned all these tourists kind of walking in the health department. And, you know, they had forklifts running back and forth across the tracks. Other property owners were upset because if it were abandoned, it would revert to them. Mm-hmm. There wasn't this broad public support. When you say persistence, because the seafood processing plants, the managers, owners of those, Tom Carmichael, who had the bulk fueling plant, you know, other property owners, a couple of attorneys in town that had property on the riverfront, were not happy with this, and they had political influence, but to good fortune, the city council recognized a good idea. Mm-hmm. Astoria has always had just such clean politics.
Yeah, I agree.
In all my years as a community development director and city manager, not one time was I ever approached by anyone who wanted me to do them a favor, like, hey, I can do this for you if you do this for me. It just never happened. And so even though there were some, I'd say, influential business people in town, the concept won over. The port was not a fan of the Riverwalk at the time. The Port of Astoria said, if you take out the rail line, you might as well rip our aorta
right
out.
Change is hard.
Yeah, if there isn't a rail line, there isn't a port, we're gonna die. Even though there were no trains going there, but right. You know, there's still like, well, what if? And when there's a, you know, 100 years of industrial usage on the waterfront. So I don't blame the port, but when I say persistence, they were fighting it. That's why we approached a railroad and said, well, could you just leave the infrastructure? Leave the rails, leave the ties, leave it. So if you see the rail lines, a train could still come. And that relaxed the port.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so some people might say, oh, it's because we're going to put the trolley was not even a
concept.
the railroad tracks were there because for the port, who envisioned cargo and in a future industrial sort of port, that with those rails in place, trains could come. And so that's why. And then just by chance, you know, the trolley and, you know, things just, it was just kind of a cool by chance thing.
But I think Robert Jacob.
Oh, yeah.
The trolley, yeah.
Yeah, and that's
a whole other good story.
But you asked about the Morosi plan. So once we broke the logjam with the Burlington Northern and we could rail bank the line and control it, it said, okay, then what do we do with it? You know, like a trail is one thing, but what do you do?
We've used up all our time today, so the story of all that was done will have to wait until next month at this same time. We'll learn about creation of the Riverwalk, the removal and cleanup of the old polluted plywood mill, creation of the Mill Pond development, and how we got to today. We've been talking with Paul Benoit, Community Development Director and later City Manager for the City of Astoria. This is The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca. Thanks for listening. Thank you.